Is you here? Now, ain't that something? You do be here, listening to the Paul Leslie Hour. Thank you very much. Welcome to episode number 1006. Long time, 20 years. We got something you really want to listen to today, and listen again, and again maybe. Keith Spira, he's on our line with us. Keith writes about New Orleans music and culture and, you know, all that stuff for the Times-Picayune. Although much too humble to admit it, Keith Spira is an authority on New Orleans music. You can read his writings on NOLA.com, that's NOLA.com, and watch the show he hosts. The show is titled Let's Talk with Keith Spira on WLAE-TV. And on YouTube. Keith was very kind to call in to talk with us about the 2024 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and two legendary musicians much associated with Jazz Fest, Jimmy Buffett, who passed away September 1st, 2023, and our friend Clarence Frogman Henry, who passed away April 7th, 2024. And folks, it would mean the world to us if you subscribed to Paul Leslie's YouTube channel. We're trying to promote the channel and want to get more of our content out there to, well, to listeners, fans, people like you, like me. And please be sure to like our videos and by all means comment, talk, write, scribe. Let us know how you're feeling, how you love it, how you want it, and we'll do it. Okay, it's time. Now let's switch it over to Paul and Keith Spira.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Keith. How are you, sir?
Well, things are a little more settled now. I managed to go retrieve my children, and the floodwaters are receding. Our street is still not drivable out front, but it's getting there, so that's good.
Well, Keith, it's very good of you to make the time to talk to us, considering all of that.
I'm glad it's glad we can do it. So if you can do it now, then let's go ahead and knock it out.
All right, sounds good. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I've enjoyed your writing for years, and it's rare that people who have a byline, we don't hear enough from them. That's my opinion anyways. Keith Spira, he writes for the Times-Picayune. Many of you have seen his writings on NOLA.com. And also, I want everybody to check out his show. It's called Let's Talk with Keith Spira, and it's on WLAE-TV. But no matter where you are, you can watch all the episodes on YouTube. So good to talk to you, Keith.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Well, I want to start this interview with a lyric. I cut my teeth on Gumbo Rock with Benny Spellman and Dr. John. Sweet Irma Thomas and Frogman Henry used to boogie-woogie all night long. And those words were written by Jimmy Buffett from his song Saxophones, which many of you are well aware of. Keith, what goes through your head when you hear those words?
You know, it makes me think that Jimmy absolutely knew his New Orleans music, you know? I mean, he really did cut his teeth on a lot of that stuff, and New Orleans was a formative place for him, obviously. You know, and he did not just pay lip service to the music from New Orleans. He was a dedicated fan and a booster of it, you know? I mean, he championed New Orleans music in a lot of different ways, for sure.
Well spoken. It just occurs to me now, as I say all those names, you just had Irma Thomas on your show. I watched that interview. It was really, really good. But it occurs to me that now with Frogman passing, just about everybody listed there is gone now.
Yeah, it's definitely, that chapter of New Orleans music is definitely closing in terms of the original practitioners. I mean, besides Irma Thomas, you know, you've got Al Carnival, Tom Johnson is still around. Deacon John is still around. You know, one of the original Dixie Cups is still around. And then the list gets pretty short after that. You know, we've lost a lot of those guys from back in the day. You know, I mean, two of the four Neville brothers are still around, but only one of them is actively making music, Cyril. You know, the original Meters, with the exception of Art Neville, are still around and still playing. But, you know, those guys are getting up in age. So, yeah, you know, it's something when you think about that most of those names are mentioned in that lyric are gone, and now Jimmy's gone as well.
And one of the things that I like about what you do is you keep a lot of these older artists, you keep their name out there, and people, I don't want to sound preachy or anything, but go see these people, because you're going to always remember it. Keith, can you recall the first time you met Clarence Frogman Henry?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's been a bunch of years, and I imagine it was probably out at Jazz Fest at one point. It kind of all blurs together. I mean, I've covered, let's see, this will be my 32nd Jazz Fest, I think, that I've covered.
Wow.
coming up. So, when I do the math, I've literally spent more than half a year of my life at the fairgrounds at Jazz Fest. It's something like, you know, 200 odd days now at this point. So I imagine it was back then. And yeah, you know, he was always just a real gregarious character, but first and foremost, a character. I mean, you know, the man was married, what, 7 times, I think, you know? So it takes a certain type of individual to kind of roll like that, like he did.
Yeah. I know I didn't know him to the extent you did, but he was a character. I mean, wouldn't you say it's fair to say that Frogman was eccentric?
Yes, that is without question. You know, yeah, he lived in this little house in Algiers where, you know, the walls were just covered. And when I say covered, I mean every square inch of the walls were covered with photographs and other memorabilia from throughout his career. And he collected, you know, all these frogs of every description. You know, some he got himself, others were sent to him by fans. So you know, he had this huge collection of frogs. And yeah, apparently several of his wives didn't appreciate sharing all that space with the frogs, I guess. But, you know, but yeah, he did his thing and, you know, was kind of very single-minded right up to the end. You know, from what one of his daughters told me, you know, he had back surgery in February. And, you know, I mean, for years, he's used a walker to get around or a wheelchair, and he's had a lot of mobility issues. But, you know, he had the surgery in February hoping that it would improve his ability to walk. And, you know, the man was 87 years old, which surgery at that age is risky. And apparently that's what did him in. He never recovered from some of the complications that resulted from that surgery. So, but, you know, from what his daughter said, he was bound and determined to do it and to give it a try, and nobody could talk him out of it. So there you go. He was Frogman till the end.
One of the things I remember from one of the interviews that I did with him, you know, you mentioned that house, and amongst all those frogs, everything from frog, you know, ceramic to little paintings of frogs, 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 frogs. There are also tons of pictures of him with just about everybody, you know, Paul Schaefer, British and American rock stars. But there was one I asked him about, and he said, "I love Jimmy Buffett." I remember he said it like that. Can you tell us about, from your observation as a writer and also just having gone to all these events, and including Jazz Fest, what, on a personal level, would you say was Jimmy's relationship with the New Orleans musicians?
You know, he was, you know, at least, you know, sort of an honorary member of the community of musicians here. I mean, you know, the younger ones thought of him as kind of a musical uncle, you know, and he was certainly a kindred spirit with a lot of them. Even though he wasn't from here, he cut his teeth here in the French Quarter, you know, back in the late 60s. So he was a fan of the music, like, you know, as I said earlier, a devoted fan. It wasn't just paying lip service. It was knowing the music, knowing the musicians, and being as supportive of them as he could. You know, for a while, he had that Margaritaville Records label. He had the Iguanas on that label and a couple other people. You know, he brought Louisiana musicians out to perform with him. You know, he always was doing stuff with Alan Toussaint. either jumping up on Alan's set or having Alan come up on his set at Jazz Fest. You know, he was part of the extended family of New Orleans music. I think that's safe to say. You know, and one of the interesting things about it was that, you know, back in the 60s, when he was playing in the French Quarter as an unknown, is when he first met Quint Davis, who would become the producer of the Jazz Festival, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. You know, that festival started in 1970. George Ween, the guy that actually founded the festival, enlisted Quint, who was a student at Tulane University at the time, to kind of be an intern. And eventually Quint, you know, took over running the festival. But he and Jimmy met before either one of them were anybody, really. And they stayed in touch through the decades. And as their careers progressed, they kept hanging out. You know, there's a great photo, a couple of great photos of Jimmy and Quint at, I think it was the 1987 Jazz Fest, maybe, at a Neville Brothers nighttime concert. And they were just hanging out, and Jimmy ended up getting up on stage with the Nevilles. And then a couple years later, Jimmy played at the festival for the first time, I think in 1989. That was his first official gig. And then, you know, he's played really every couple years, it seems like, ever since then, you know. And, you know, and he would come hang out on years when he wasn't actually on the festival bill. He'd always be out there. I remember one year I saw him driving around the infield on a golf cart, which is quite an honor if you're given a golf cart out at Jazz Fest to drive around. And he stopped it and hopped off and walked through the crowd. Pretty much nobody recognized him, and he went right up to one of the gumbo booths. It was the Prejean's gumbo booth selling this pheasant, quail, and andouille gumbo. And he walked up, bought himself a couple bowls. Nobody recognized him, not even the people that served him the gumbo. So it was very funny. So he was able to wander the grounds anonymously, you know, with a baseball cap and sunglasses on. He looked like, you know, 95% of the other people out there, and just enjoy it. So, you know, that to me shows just what a fan he was of the festival. You know, he wasn't just there when he was getting paid. He was there basically every year to hang out and enjoy it just like everybody else.
Very, very interesting. And that does sound like a hardcore fan. It's fascinating that given his celebrity, that he was able to kind of go under the radar like that.
Well, you know, a late middle-aged white guy in a baseball cap, t-shirt, sunglasses, and shorts, again, looks like, you know, 70% of the other like middle-aged white guys out there. So, you know, so yeah, so he was able to roam the grounds like really anonymously. And I was a little surprised myself in that one particular instance, because he walked, you know, because I kind of just walked behind him and, you know, just to see what would happen. And literally, I mean, he passed by hundreds of people and not a one of them gave him a second glance. And yet, you know, the next year he would play to, you know, 40,000 people out there at the fairgrounds, you know. But yeah, he was able to blend in and do his thing.
Interesting stuff. So, Keith, when did you first come in contact with Jimmy Buffett in the flesh yourself?
Let's see. I mean, it probably would have been out there at one of the Jazz Fests. You know, that particular gumbo incident was in 2014, but I'd met him previous to that and, you know, interviewed him, I mean, a bunch of times going back to like, oh gosh, the early 90s, I want to say. Like, I mean, I remember talking to him when I was still working for Offbeat Magazine, the monthly music and entertainment magazine in New Orleans, and that was in the early 90s. And I, you know, interviewed him about Margaritaville Records. So I probably met him back then, or maybe right after he opened the Margaritaville Cafe outpost that he had for a while here on Decatur Street, New Orleans, which was kind of back in those days, I guess, back in the 90s, I want to say. So I probably met him, you know, back then at some point is when I first ran into him in the flesh. And then, you know, periodically throughout the years, and, you know, including that time at Jazz Fest with the gumbo incident. And again, you know, talked to him a bunch of times, you know, over the phone for interviews for various subjects over the years. And he was always, you know, more than willing to talk and, you know, and very straightforward and, you know, very sharp. I mean, you know, that's the thing about Jimmy. I mean, you know, everyone associates him with the good times and the beach vibe and vacation and all that. But I mean, you know, as everyone knows, he was an incredibly astute businessman and very, very sharp and always, you know, always happy to talk. I mean, it never felt like it was a chore for him when he was doing these interviews that I did with him. He always, you know, was engaged and forthright and just real pleasant. So I, you know, I never had a bad experience with him.
Is there anything you think our listeners would be surprised to know about Jimmy Buffett?
you know, I mean, your listeners probably know as much Jimmy Buffett trivia as anybody else. But yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, just you know, his ability to blend in out there was really interesting. And just the, you know, if you didn't see him not only doing his sets at Jazz Fest, his shows, but all the times that I saw him get up on stage with other people and how much fun he sparked by doing that. I remember one time, I think it was around maybe 2000, Lyle Lovett was playing on the main stage at Jazz Fest. And I think that was one of the years where Jimmy wasn't on the bill, but he was out there hanging out. And he got up on stage with Lyle and did If I Had a Boat with him, which was, you know, one of Lyle's signature songs. And it was just so cool. He brought such a great energy to it. And then a few years ago, more recently, Dave Matthews was doing an unplugged set with Tim Reynolds, the guitarist in the Dave Matthews Band. They were playing an acoustic set as a duo on the main stage. And Jimmy came out and, you know, it was a vast crowd in front of the stage, you know, probably another 40,000 people or whatever. So Jimmy walks up and looks out at the crowd and gets on the mic and turns to Dave and says, "Man, too bad you can't draw a crowd out here," you know, and then proceeded to do, what is it, Pirate Turns 40 with Dave and Tim, which was, you know, great. And obviously a very poignant song looking back because, you know, about a pirate aging, and, you know, certainly Jimmy still had a lot of gas left in the tank then, but, you know, he was starting down toward the end of the road. So yeah, that was it. I mean, you know, again, I don't think it's a surprise to your listeners to know that Jimmy was, you know, that Jimmy you saw on stage was always the Jimmy that I encountered off stage as well. That same spirit, that same energy, that same just love of life and love of whatever moment he was in. I mean, he truly seemed like he enjoyed whatever moment he was in. That was not a facade. That was not an image. That was Jimmy being Jimmy.
Speaking of songs, you just mentioned A Pirate Looks at 40. Just kind of randomly on Spotify today, the Aaron Neville version of La Vie Dansante, which is a song that Jimmy Buffett co-wrote, came on. So, Keith, what is your favorite Buffett song?
Man, you know, let's think here. You know, you have to hear me out on this one. You know, Margaritaville is one of those songs, kind of like, you know, Stairway to Heaven or Hotel California, where you've heard it so much that at a certain point you just kind of tune it out or take it for granted. But if you step back for a second and just kind of try to listen to it again for the first time, you're struck by how good that song really is. Like the songcraft that was involved in something that seems simple, but to make something that seems simple so enduring and endearing. And, you know, and Margaritaville certainly captures that as much as any other song that he wrote. But, you know, look, all those crowd favorites, all the sing-alongs, they're all fun. I mean, the fact that people still enjoyed singing them and enjoying them so much, you know, it's just a testament to how good he was at writing one of those songs. You mentioned the one with Aaron just now. There was another song that I just heard recently. I think it's called Middle of the Night.
Oh, yeah.
That he did with Art Neville, that he co-wrote with Art. But what a great song, you know, I mean, and he had Aaron singing on it, and it was just a really cool song. So, I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, he wrote with other people, including the Neville brothers here, and came up with credible songs, which just kind of shows that he was very much on the same wavelength as those guys, you know, as well.
Great, great answer, Keith. You gave us a classic song that everybody knows that maybe people wouldn't necessarily recognize because it's such a famous sing-along song. Hey, this is a really brilliant song. And then you gave us a deep cut, Middle of the Night. Great, great choices there. What are you looking forward to with this year, the 2024 New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, coming right up?
Yeah, we're right on it here. Obviously, it's going to be a big Jimmy Buffett celebration. You know, they have a lot of events planned, including, you know, the culminating set on the final Sunday, May 5th, where it's going to be the Coral Reefer Band performing with special guests on the main stage, you know, the same slot that Jimmy played in for a bunch of times. So that's going to be great. But there's also going to be a jazz funeral procession in Jimmy's honor out there at the fairgrounds on that Saturday, May 4th. And there's an area in one of the fields called the Ancestors Area, where they install these wooden cutout paintings of important figures from the festival's history that have passed away. So it's a mix of musicians and, you know, and jazz fest staffers. And Jimmy's going to be installed in the Ancestors Area this year on that May 4th day. And also that afternoon, I'm going to lead a discussion on the Music Heritage Stage, the Allison Minor Music Heritage Stage, which is an indoor stage inside the fairgrounds grandstand where they do musician interviews. So I'm leading a remembrance of Jimmy Buffett featuring his daughter, Savannah, as well as a couple of members of the Coral Reefer Band. So we'll all be telling stories. They'll be telling stories and remembrances of Jimmy. So I think that's going to be really neat to hear all those stories from those guys and kind of host that session with them.
That'll be very interesting. So it will be you, Savannah Jane mm-hmm. Buffett, and couple of the Coral Reefers, and that'll be the 4th of May. Is that correct?
Correct. I think it's at 4:00 on the 4th of May. That's Saturday. It's the second Saturday of the festival. So it's the day before the Coral Reefer Band is performing. But, you know, yeah, if any Buffett folks are out there on that Saturday, you'll want to catch that second line procession earlier in the day and the dedication of Jimmy's likeness in the Ancestors Area, which is at the back of the Congo Square field. And then I believe it's around 4:00 where I'll be doing the session in the grandstand at the Allison Minor Music Heritage Stage with a couple of coral reefers to be named. I don't know, that they haven't told me exactly which ones it's going to be yet. But and then Savannah as well. So that'll be, I think, a lot of fun. And you know, it'll be kind of neat since they're really going out of their way to celebrate Jimmy this year.
Definitely. Now, Keith, you have come in contact with so many legendary, celebrated people, from like Fats Domino to, as we've been talking about, Jimmy Buffett. Has there been someone that you were in particular, especially in awe of?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, I try not to be too in awe just because, you know, I have a job to do and I want to, you know, and I want to be a pro. But, you know, look, I mean, I grew up as a big fan of the band Rush, you know, the power trio out of Canada. And I remember the first time I interviewed Neil Peart, the drummer from Rush, the drummer and lyricist, you know, it was all I could do to like not totally like be a fanboy. And, you know, and there was a famous Chris Farley sketch on Saturday Night Live years ago where he is this interviewer interviewing Paul McCartney. And he's, you know, the whole interview with Farley going like, you know, Paul, that song you threw at the Beatles was so cool, you know, like that. And I was trying not to be that guy, you know, on the phone with Neil at the time. But now look, I mean, you know, yeah, I've had, you know, I've been privileged to hang out with a lot of musicians over the years, you know, talk to even many more on the phone, you know, ahead of them coming into town. But, you know, like when you mentioned Fats Domino, you know, 2007, I tagged along with Fats's entourage on a trip to New York when he went up there to promote a Katrina tribute CD where artists like Paul McCartney and Robert Plant and Elton John recorded versions of Fats' songs. So they convinced Fats, who didn't like to travel, to go up to New York and do several events. And he was going to appear on the Today Show and do these other things. And I was able to go along. So just like, you know, hanging out with Fats for those 4 days in New York and like getting to see all of his idiosyncrasies up close and, you know, like being in a hotel room where he ordered room service and, you know, the steak was delivered and they cut the fat off and he was all mad because the fat had been cut off his steak. And, you know, at the Today Show taping, you know, it was 7 a.m, you know, with Hoda Kotb and the other hosts, and Fats got a band and the piano set up, and he had a bottle of Heineken that he was hiding next to the leg of the piano that he was sipping on like between takes, you know, at 7 a.m, just to steady his nerves, you know, on the Today Show. So like getting to see all that up close was a whole lot of fun. So that's stuff that I really enjoy, you know, being able to see the kind of behind the scenes stuff, how it all works.
Well, Keith, you have some great memories and you have many, many great stories that you've shared through the years. I always like to let my guest kind of take the microphone at the end, meaning you can go anywhere you like. Anything you'd like to say to our listeners here in closing?
Look, you know, don't ever let anybody make you feel bad for liking Jimmy Buffett's music, because the man knew his way around a song. He was, you know, a great songwriter. You know, he knew the art of songcraft. And he was as authentic guy as
authentic of a guy as I've ever come across in all my years of covering musicians. So hail Jimmy Buffett. Looking forward to celebrating him at the 2024 Jazz Fest and beyond.
One more real quick thing. Mm-hmm. I can't resist asking anybody with your area code, can you recommend a place to eat?
Basically every booth at the Jazz Fest, I think, you know, you can't go wrong if you're going out there to Jazz Fest, you know. But yeah, look, you know, I mean, Parkway Tavern is like the go-to place for like a shrimp po' boy for sure, you know. So that's one of the New Orleans go-tos for sure.
Excellent. Well, Keith, you're very generous with your time and very generous with your stories. Thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right, sir. Have a great one.
All right. Thank you. You too.
All right. Have a good night.
See ya.
We thank you and appreciate you dropping in for the Paul Leslie Hour today. You know, you can help the Paul Leslie Hour in our mission to provide independent media content like this by visiting www.thepaulleslie.com/support. We truly thank you. This is your announcer speaking. Performance of the Entertainer intro song and Corina Corina outro song, courtesy of John Premorano. Well, that's it for today. So until next time, be safe and be good.